Hello, everybody, and welcome to Vlogcast episode number 109. Today I'm joined by Stephen.
Hello, I'm Stephen.
And Ben. And if you don't know who Ben is, he goes under the name of Darth Robo on the forums and the community and whatever. So, yes, hello, Ben.
Hello.
Cool.
Hi, Ben.
There's lots of news to go through because, you know, we had the VCR for Sweet Home for Halloween, and then. Yeah,
that so
we
giant missed Smash lots thing
of stuff.
Landed.
Yeah, lots of stuff happened. So we'll start with Smash because, you know, that was probably the stuff that we missed that was the most important. First of all, Nintendo announced that Smash Bros. Would be coming to Australia originally on December 6th, I believe.
Yes.
And that it was going to come in a pack by itself or with the GameCube adapter included for just $10 more. So pretty reasonable, I think, price-wise. But then, up until I think it was yesterday, they decided to move it back up to November 29th in Australia, which means I think we get it with everyone else, or we get it only 8 days after America instead.
Yeah, it's not as much of a wait anymore, which is kind of nice. Yeah,
it's still a week. I would like it to be the same day, but I guess
it's only a week of crying alone instead of two,
or just focusing entirely on the 3DS version.
Yeah,
there's that. Yes.
But yeah, so it's coming. We finally have a date. I'm glad it was this year because, you know, there was kind of murmurs that they might push it back to next year, but I think that would be really crazy of them to do that. So yeah.
It's coming sooner. Everyone can be happy sooner.
I don't think anyone could complain about that.
No.
Yeah.
Stop listening if you don't like it.
And that means that it also comes out the same day as the Amiibo, because I don't know if you guys remember, but when they announced, like, the original date of December 6th, they announced the Amiibo for the 28th November. So the Amiibo were going to come out on this, like, before, but I guess now they all come at once.
Now there's an actual game you can use it with when you get it.
Yeah. Which is always good. On top of that, the other, like, major announcement, I guess, to come out of that is that they went through all the Wii U version and, you know, the bonuses that it will have. But they also announced that Mewtwo would be coming as a downloadable character for Smash Bros. 3DS and Wii U next year. So if you buy both the games, I believe you get him for free. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I read.
Free if you've purchased both, yeah.
Yeah, so he's coming to both versions, obviously, because for some stupid reason, which they want to keep the rosters exactly the same. Have ruined the Wii U version as a result. No.
Get over Ice Climbers.
It's not about the Ice Climbers. It's the principal.
Principal Skinner.
They've been out of work for so long, and they got their hopes back up, and now they've just been dropped again.
But it is kind of amazing that DLC is confirmed. Like, I mean, it was surely going to come, but now we know that there are surely going to be more than just Mewtwo coming down the line.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Like, I wonder if they... I feel like if they were going to do more, though, they would have announced it here.
No, it takes a very long time to make a character, didn't you hear?
Oh, is that what they said? I didn't actually watch the presentation, so...
Yeah, basically they just said it takes a long time, so autumn next year.
Well, thank God it's Nintendo, because at least I don't have problems implementing female characters.
Yes.
Yes.
They're just good at animating those.
Yeah.
Maybe they will bring Bayonetta to the game.
They even have genderless characters like Mewtwo.
Genderless characters.
So progressive.
Truly. On top of that, they also showed off that, I guess this is kind of, I know there are a lot of people that would be upset by this news, but Ridley is in the game, but he's not playable.
The tears.
Well, it's kind of shitty for them to do this, especially, like, I'm not that angry, but, you know, I'm sure there are other people that are angry.
I don't think at this point it even warrants a sigh anymore, because the fact that he's in there is just good. It's good fan service, so
yeah,
I don't have a problem with it, so...
I'm sure that he was planned to be this stage character for years before we even knew Smash Bros. Wii U was going to exist.
And this was... I remember they teased him on this level.
Did
they tease him, or did people just look at shadows on existing screenshots?
I think it was that one.
Yeah, I swear that we kind of knew this already, but maybe not officially. But anyway, for people who don't know, there's a level... I don't know why they... Of all the games to pick, they pick a level from Other M.
Yes.
So in the Pyrosphere level, Ridley will appear, and if you attack him enough, he'll become... Like, he'll help you out in the fight. So I think that's the same as... you know that... Is there that pink cloud level in...
That bird thing from the Mother level?
Oh, the fighting man?
Yeah, think, so it's the same as that, I think. Like,
it's just a blaziken.
Yeah. if you attack him enough, he'll join you and fight with you. So it's kind of cool. I still wish that he was playable, but whatever.
Oh, well.
I don't know, I just want more Metroid characters playable. I was thinking about it, there's not a lot, unless we start getting into those awful sidekick characters like Gendrader, that purple flame from Metroid Prime 3.
We could play as a giant level-destroying Kraid.
No, I've got it. We could have Adam Malkovich, her commanding officer, and he could just restrict the use of other people's items and weapons.
That would be interesting to play as.
Final smash. Even,
what about MB?
Oh, wow.
And she could switch between her... I don't know. She could create unfulfilling final battles.
Imagine if Samus's final smash was turning into SAX. Although that's just Samus.
Canonically, that makes no sense.
Sorry, that was a terrible joke.
So there'll be a giant flash, and then she's exactly the same. And
she has spooky eyes for Halloween.
I think the inherent problem with Metroid is that there are no other notable... good characters that could fit inside the boundaries of Smash Bros. As characters.
I mean, I guess it's kind of good that they've got the Mother Brain Assist Trophy, and really as a level thing, they're at least doing something, I guess.
And yeah, when you think about it, the big, obviously the Bowser equivalent for Metroid is Mother Brain, and she's just in a mobile organ in a jar, so she's not much of a character, is she?
Not really.
But
she shoots with eyes.
And if it was going to be Kraid, it'd have to be fake Kraid, and that would just be unfulfilling, because he's the only one that fits the same size as the other characters.
Could be one of those little baby Kraids that are in the hallway before Kraid.
That's fake. It's actually called fake Kraid, I'm pretty sure.
I've been schooled.
These canon Japanese names. Anyway, Metroid is... Ridley is in the game, just not playable.
We really like Metroid.
Kind of. Yeah, we all do. Yeah, it's not a very good podcast for people who don't. On top of that, they also showed off that the Wii U version of Smash Bros. Will allow for 8-player battles, so it's only local multiplayer. I'm really glad it is, because the 3DS version can barely keep up with 4 players, let alone 8. Mm. And it's exclusive to the Wii U version, obviously.
Imagine on the 3DS screen, 8 players would just... It's hard enough with 4.
Yeah.
Well, they did address that. They openly admitted it while announcing it.
Mm.
When you play like an 8-player match and stuff, the levels will be bigger.
And there's only certain levels that support it.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic, personally.
Yeah.
I struggle to think of 7 other people that I'd be able to get in the same room to play Smash Bros., but if that happens, it'll be amazing.
I'm sure you could.
That silence.
Mm.
Yeah,
see, those are all my friends that I would play Smash Bros. With.
You can use like all your control options that you'd imagine you could use, including the 3DS console, which I still don't understand why you would want to do that, but you can.
Yeah, thanks, Nintendo. Yeah,
it's pretty cool. I wonder how well it performs. Like, I mean, if this thing is rendering at, 60 FPS, probably not full HD. 8 players on screen. What if they all pick Rosalina? 2 characters each.
Mm.
It's a lot of shit going on. But
restrict items to only Pokeballs and assist trophies. High probability.
Or just render 4 of the characters in 30 FPS.
Could just throw the Wii U in the bin at this point. It's going to explode.
Yeah, that's a good idea too.
Will it be able to handle 8 Captain Falcons at once? That's the question.
Nothing can.
What happens if they all Falcon Punch the same area at the same time?
That's when you get a broken TV.
The universe will explode.
Or that.
Nintendo also showed off a custom stage creator, which means, as you can imagine, you can use it to create custom stages.
Wow.
You can use it. I mean, I think this fits. Did they have this in a game before?
They did, in Brawl.
Yeah, there was a stage creator, but it was much more like modular. You just had to put bricks and blocks together. This one's far more freeform drawing art time fun.
Which works in well with the stylus, rather than just having blocky renditions of 64 stages that people desperately wanted back, like Saffron City, for example.
Yeah, that would be cool to be able to create that. I mean, I don't think you can,
you can't make the Charmander scream.
Yeah, or, make them program them to appear and shit. Yeah. But, it's pretty cool. I wonder if this is Nintendo kind of trying to start to work out how they're going to do Mario Maker. If they have, I mean, I'm sure they've already started working it out, but if this is kind of
a test.
A testing ground for their skills in user-created.
Yeah, I wonder if it'll be you'll be able to share them online. Has that been mentioned?
Surely you will.
I'm pretty sure.
So, but
I just closed the tab, so I can't check. But
God damn it.
Yeah, I would assume you would be able to. I'd be
There we go. The facility to share these stages with your friends will be eventually added.
Oh, so yeah, it's that's not right. There.
Might not be there to start with.
Finish your shit, Nintendo.
Then we still wouldn't have Smash Bros. We probably still wouldn't have the Wii U at this point.
Yes.
Anyway.
I think Nintendo's fault in that is that they're so honest about DLC, they say that it's not ready at the start, which is what most studios would have anyway. They'd have a whole bunch of unfinished content, possibly to be shipped later as DLC, but Nintendo's like, we do have it there, it's just not finished.
Yeah, I mean, at least it shields them from people saying, oh, you just cut this off and chose to release it as DLC on launch day. They're like, no, it's straight up not done for another 12 months, sorry.
I think it's just their inherently oddly honest nature.
And nice.
It's kind of, but odd. But good.
Yes. So, yeah, to close off the, I guess, the presentation, there were 50 things, apparently, but I don't... I've only read about 7, so yeah, I don't know
there were,
what...
There were lots and lots of things, but they were like, Smash Bros. Wii U has more music and different stages, and you can use different controllers. There were a lot of things that weren't terribly exciting.
Yeah. So basically, on the Wii U version, just like how the 3DS version had the pretty average Smash Run mode, the Wii U version has quite a few different modes too. The big one that they focused on was Smash Tour, which is basically like a party game, kind of like Mario Party, like you got a board game.
Yeah, weird board game thing.
You use items, spin a wheel to move around the map, just like the Game of Life, but with Mario. Four people can play at once. I don't really know how it works. I believe that, like, as you go through the board and stuff, you pick up people, and then
At
the end, there's a big fight, and that, and whoever you've picked up, and whatever you've picked up, it helps you.
They count as your stock.
In your final battle. Oh, right, okay.
And also, you can pick up all the, like, power-ups and stuff, like in Smash Run, to give you better stats and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very exciting, James.
I literally yawned for that. It's not because of that. They also showed off the special orders mode. I remember they teased this earlier in the week with the Master Hand and the Crazy Hand. Basically, in Master Orders mode, you can up your difficulty to get greater rewards, whereas Crazy Orders mode, you get to pay to enter battles, and they get harder the longer you go on. So it's basically, you know, that non-stop thing they had.
Yeah, and with that one, basically, you can either choose to leave with what you've won and you keep it, or if you keep going, you can get more rewards, but if you lose, then you've lost everything.
Yep. And there's also apparently a new boss. I don't know what it is.
Crazier hand.
Nah, I think it's inside. You know that salt and pepper monster that comes out of the crazy. Oh yeah, the core.
Master core. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's something inside that. So there's actually a whole thing inside that core.
Inception. Maybe that's where they hit the new Metroid game.
Yes. Maybe when you beat it, it unlocks and you can play Metroid Prime 4.
Surprise.
Yay. Metroid Other M2.
Oh. I'll just leave now.
That was his childhood. So yeah, that's it for the Smash Bros. News. There was a lot of it. We got through it pretty quick though, but so it's coming soon. It's actually pretty soon now that I think about it. It's like 3 weeks-ish or something.
Yeah, about 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So we're kinda, in the same month.
Yeah, which is kind of strange, but good. Yeah. So,
speaking of strange, but good.
Pokemon is still a thing and it's still coming out.
That's a perfect segue then.
There are new things in it sometimes.
Yes. So, as people know, Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire are both coming out on the 21st in Australia. So, they've been showing off slowly. I haven't been paying too much attention to this stuff because I'm going to be honest, it's not grabbing me as much as X and Y did, like pre-release. But they basically showed off new Mega Evolutions. The ones they showed off in the magazine, that weird Koro Koro magazine, is Mega Pidgeot and Mega Beedrill. So, you know, it's a nice, I guess, throwback for the old fans.
Mega Beedrill looks so good.
Yeah, Mega Pidgeot just looks the same, but
it just has emo haircut.
Yeah. Mega Pidgeot went to the barber.
Yes.
And that was all.
That was it.
Dropped off his clothes at Rivers.
All that happened. What? And then they also revealed, like, officially they revealed a whole bunch of new details about how the game will work. Mega Latios and Latias? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, that's how I always say it, so
they
I hope so.
Voice work so I can tell. Yeah, they have a new ability called Soar, which basically allows you to, you know, go above the clouds and actually fly somewhere, whereas before
that's pretty cool.
You were just like, and then like fly somewhere.
the sound of descending a set of stairs.
Yeah. When you're in the air, you can do tricks.
Oh, good.
Is, you know, very Star Fox. And there's also stuff.
Roll.
Yeah, apparently up in the air, there's also other stuff you can find, like Pokemon items. You know,
I think the best part about that is the fact you can now land on routes. And and don't have to land in a town, then travel to the route or that sort of thing. So I think that's a really good addition. You just make it much more efficient.
That's a good point, actually.
Especially when you're in the grinding mode of the game and you really have to get stuff done, so to speak.
Still can't land in caves, though.
Should be able to fly through caves.
You should be able to just smash a hole in the roof and just drop yourself in. They also showed off that Mega Steelix and Mega Glalie have been are coming too. So yeah, Mega Steelix basically turns into Jay Leno when he becomes.
I don't think any more needs to be said.
Yeah.
Oh wow, he really does.
Yeah, his chin is just so big.
I believe the majority of comparisons from Mega Glalie have been regarding Wario.
Yeah, wow, he kind of does look like Wario eating you in Smash Bros.
Moving on.
Oh, I just saw him. Yes, I agree.
Thanks.
This weird-ass Pokemon. On top of that, they also, you know, there's a whole bunch of new tools and items and stuff. You know, they're basically adding in all those extra features from X and Y into Alpha and Sapphire.
Hooray.
So, yeah. Pokemon and Me is coming back. Yay.
Can't wait to pat my terrifying Glalie.
Yes.
And my, you know.
Hope he doesn't eat your hand off.
I think the best part of this, of that feature, is that you can actually, you know, pat the elder gods of the Pokemon universe.
Yeah.
So that's always
these
important.
These creators of the entire universe, just give them a pat and a lolly.
Yeah, no, and also they like muffins, or whatever they're called. Pokepuffs? I don't know.
Pokemon's so ridiculous.
Hang on, would they be bringing back the blending berry system where you create those berry blocks?
I'm sure. Pretty sure everything that they did in those, they're bringing back, like the bases and stuff.
That mini game was so great.
I'm pretty sure they will.
3D.
I'm not sure if you're being facetious or not.
I recall in Pearl and Diamond, you had to do a really vapid, stylus mini game where you just swirled it around a lot, and it was really awful.
Yeah, that was like, lol, we have a touchscreen.
Yeah. Well, now it's like, lol, we have 3D, so...
Yeah.
Same diff.
Just lots of lolling in the Pokemon company offices.
They just walk around, lol, 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 lol.
And then I think a lot of people were asking this before, but now we kind of have confirmation. All the new Mega Evolutions that are being shown in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire won't be added back into Pokemon X and Y.
This is a bit of a bummer. Like,
it's kind of weird. Like, because I feel like with Pokemon, you know, no. But then again, now that I think about it, that's not like. I mean, if you like when Gold and Silver came out, like you couldn't trade those things back.
It was very specific ones you could trade, but like these are. I don't know.
It seems like going forward, but you can't really go back, you know.
But the problem is now it's the same system, same engine, same console. People are going to have a problem with that. What I can see is that obviously a fan base that is, you know, between 10 and 12 years old will look at that and say, why isn't this working? And probably get confused.
And then there's the fan base that are between 25 and 35 years old that will just scream about it
and complain on the internet.
Yes. And well, I know it means, I guess, you have to buy the new game, which everyone was probably going to do anyway, but I don't know. I think all it's going to actually mean is just, you know, when you're doing a battle with someone with X and Y, because I'm pretty sure they're cross-compatible for fights, but you just won't be able to Mega Evolve ones that aren't in X and Y, so it'll be just a weird thing.
Yeah, but you can't battle Pete. Like, if you have Ruby, you can't battle someone who's in X and Y.
I think you can.
Well, hang on. Would it be like when, I think it was Street Fighter, when each of those new updates, you could still join in online with the update, but if they had an unlocked character and you didn't, it was just, you know, tough pickies sort of thing?
That's what I'm thinking. Like, it just won't let you use that Pokemon.
Yeah.
Be like, this Pokemon
I really don't think that they would be cross-compatible, like, for battles.
But
I
they have stayed
wrong.
Silent. They have stayed silent on it, but then announced that they're not going to be backwards compatible with a Mega Evolution, so that doesn't bode well either.
I mean, I would say they, like, wanted you, like, there's always, like, if you want to transfer your shit, you've got Pokebag.
They are compatible. All Pokemon in the National Pokedex are compatible. All items in X and Y are compatible, but stuff that's been introduced in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire can only be used with other Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire players.
Oh, I see.
I was right.
So, that still remains vague as to whether you can have a Mega Evolution from Alpha and Sapphire and then join in a battle with someone who's playing X and Y.
Basically, I think if it's something that wasn't in X and Y to start with, it I don't know if it won't let you connect to the game at all, or if it just won't let you Mega Evolve. I'm sure we'll find out, and I'm sure people just will be not bothered and just get a Mega Ruby instead.
Yeah.
Like, people will just upgrade.
That's a good sales tactic, if anything.
Pretty much.
So yeah, Pokemon Ruby Alpha... Pokemon Alpha, Sapphire, and Omega Ruby are coming out on the 21st in Australia. Buy them if you want.
If you want them, then just buy them, I guess.
Go and buy them. Yeah.
At a store or the eShop.
My marketing skills are like no other. Okay. Just before we go to a break, we'll talk about the Mario Kart, which, you know, we still talk about. Is a lot of the DLC and stuff that's coming has been, like, detailed properly. They're slowly trickling out information about what's coming in the first and second packs. I think the first piece of news that came out was that Link will have his own, you know, unique motorcycle called the Master Cycle.
So good.
It's basically, it looks like a Epona with a shield slapped onto her side.
All that.
And also wheels.
I think it's more hills. Like Epona went to the world of Tron and then came back.
Yeah.
She like went to medieval retro Tron.
And they made her, they encased her in his armour.
And then she can't move her legs.
Yeah. Every time wheels. Link accelerates, she cries tears and that fuels the bike.
The fuel tank?
We just went somewhere dark.
We did.
Yeah.
Have you been playing survival horror games again?
Yes. So basically she actually that'd be a good like Silent Hill monster to fight. But
the
anyway,
horse motorcycle.
The sad horse. Anyway, who's in pain all the time? So this is in the first pack, yeah?
Yes.
The next one is
first DLC.
Next one is Isabel Villager and Dry Bowser. Yes.
All right.
With another 8 tracks and vehicles.
Yeah, but Link's in the next pack, yeah?
Yeah, with Raccoon Mario and Cat Peach.
Hooray.
So terrible.
Where's Cat Rosalina? I will boycott until then.
Where's Dog Peach?
Duck Hunt Dog?
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, so basically this is, you know, as you can imagine, Master Sword, Master Cycle, whatever. In German, apparently, it's called the Eponator. So... That's
hello,
like,
I'm the Eponator.
Yeah. It's cool that they give Link, you know, his own things. Like, I thought they were going to chuck his character in and he'd be go-karting, but no.
How ridiculous would he look on just a normal bike or a bullet bill car?
Well, I don't know.
But you'll be able to just put him in any of those vehicles, surely, because that's all the other characters
and
work.
I can't wait to do it. Just have him driving a regular car.
I want
to
put him on Mr. Scooty.
I wish that you could play as Fi and just skate through the course.
Just ballerina your way through the whole thing.
Pulling a stupid face and dancing your way through the level.
The problem
is more DLC.
The problem is she wouldn't be able to calculate the probability of winning because it's so utterly random.
Yeah, no. She just explodes. That's it. That's the end of the Zelda series. Because the Master Sword never existed. Anyway,
spoilers.
Yeah.
Oops.
Spoilers for like a 2-year-old game. Goodbye. Okay, so on top of that, Nintendo also showed off that Double Dash. I mean, Yoshi's Circuit, which was first featured in Double Dash, will be making a return.
This I'm fine with.
Yes. In the next pack. I can't even remember this thing, but then I was like, what the hell is Yoshi's Circuit? And then I was like, oh, it's the one that looks like Yoshi.
It's the one that is a Yoshi, and there's a shortcut through his back or something. I can't remember what
it is. There's a little shortcut.
Take a shortcut through his digestive tract.
didn't they take... I think that was remade in Mario Kart DS, and I think they took out that hallway out and just put a fence there instead.
I think so,
this better bring it back, because I'm certain the Wii U has the processing power to handle that hallway.
What was in the hallway?
It was just a shortcut. Oh. Just a tunnel.
You could boost off the cliff, and if you got it perfect in Double Dash, because it demanded some sort of satanic perfection, you could land in the hallway and then, you know, cut under the track and come back out.
I see.
But I don't think that was possible on Mario Kart DS.
Nintendo no longer panders to Satanists.
Oh. just for the DS era, at least.
Yes. So that's coming back.
So yeah, that's coming back. And then Nintendo also showed off Excite Bike Arena, which, as you can imagine, it's not really a Mario track, now that I think about it, but whatever.
I'm really happy about this, though. I'm sure it's kind of cool that the trailer showed it all from the side view, so it looked like the actual Excite Bike game. It will look nothing like that while you're actually playing, but it's kind of cool. It'll be a lot of opportunities for jump boosts.
That's in the first pack. I kind of wish... I know that people don't like this idea, but I do wish that they had maybe some Zelda tracks.
No, like, there is going to be one. There is going to be one, I'm certain.
Oh, there is?
I'm fairly sure.
I do remember seeing something about a Zelda track.
There'll be an Animal Crossing track as well. An F-Zero track.
They just need to rename this Nintendo Kart or something. Well, the Mario is getting a bit irrelevant.
That's what I was thinking, because they've introduced this DLC in the next generation, or, you know, later this generation. Because they are working on that new... on the successor to Wii U, as far as I read the other day. So they're not going to have the option to really just call it Mario Kart next time. It'll seem like a cop-out.
Mario Kart 9.
It'd be like taking a step backwards from this.
Super Smash Kart.
Yeah. Super Drive Friends.
Super Accelerate Bros and Sisters.
Vehicle competition. Super Vehicle Competition.
Siblings.
Like this, that generic, like, you know, home brand black and gold product name.
That weird knockoff on the PS1.
Driving video game for Wii U.
But in all seriousness, there will be a lot of older fans who are sitting there with their F-Zero HD track, with their F-Zero cart, just crying.
There's a lot of crying on this episode.
Yeah. But it's all because of Ben. I think, like, the Zelda locations would be great. Like, imagine, the valley, not the valley, what's it called? You know that place?
Gerudo Valley?
Yeah. So, what the hell? Why did I forget that? You know, the forest, that'd be a good, track of some sort. Like, you could drive through the Deku Tree and stuff, or...
Or you could go through the Saria's forest place and just get lost.
Yeah.
Or they're just really lame and they remake Maple Treeway with Zelda themes and you blast off the Deku Tree or something.
Yeah, that's probably
alright. You could launch yourself up to the Death Mountain in a giant Donkey Kong cannon.
Would Death Mountain have a grumpy face, though? That's the question.
Yes.
No, I reckon they could do it so that, like, you could drive near that big Goron and he'll just throw you up. That would be cool.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
But anyway, yeah, Nintendo should employ us and we will design Zelda levels to make Zelda Kart.
It'll just be a whiteboard full of ideas. We don't actually have any skills.
Yeah, it's like that Homer's car in The Simpsons.
That is so relevant.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's it for the first block of news. We'll go to a quick break and we'll return to finish off the news. And we're back, so we'll jump straight back into the news, because there is more to talk about, so...
Busy.
Yep, eShop stuff. First of all, Nintendo have announced that you will be able to preload games on Wii U in 2014, starting with Super Smash Bros. For Wii U, and then they'll bring the feature, I guess, to 3DS next year. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. I'm not a digital person, so this isn't as much of a big deal for me, but it is so much nicer being able to download it all, have it all ready, and then just play it, you know, as soon as the date ticks over, because I know, like, say, for example, if you buy an Xbox One game now, trying to install the patches and shit from a disc while you're waiting, like, while everyone else is trying to do it at the same time, it's painful. Like, you sometimes won't even get to play your game on the day that you buy it. So it's, I mean, I'm sure that issue isn't as bad for Nintendo because you don't have to install anything or install patches, but it's still cool because, you know, you can start
playing. It means that, you know, the moment it comes out.
As soon as you can, yeah.
Mm. Just hopefully there won't be that huge variance in between the eShop price and the retail brick and mortar price.
Oh, there will be.
Really? From $79.95.
I mean, yeah, all the eShop games are always just the RRP.
I wouldn't expect it to drop too much, though. I mean, unless JB's doing Smash Bros. For $69 or something, I wouldn't see it dropping below that, surely.
Oh, yeah. Nah, sometimes they get really crazy, like the Big W's and stuff. Big W might even do it for $59. Like,
that would be incredible.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, here we go. $69 on JB at the moment. Yeah,
and then, yeah. I'm pretty sure, like, yesterday I spoke to someone and they were like, yep, Kmart's doing Pokemon X and Y for $10.
What?
So, I'm pretty sure Kmart are getting out of games now, maybe. But, yeah.
I did hear about that, but that's...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, there's no point, because by the time you hear this, everything will be sold out. yeah. So... On top of that, Capcom and Nintendo have announced that they're bringing a Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Trilogy to the 3DS in December. Even if, like, really good because it's so hard to find the first three games.
It is. Tried.
I don't know what happened. Like, I'm pretty sure the print runs were just ridiculously small or something.
And, I mean, they're all on DS, which were, yeah, as you say, short print runs, and they're just really hard to find now. They're sold out on all the, you know, Oz game shops, and eBay's generally don't have reasonable copies for a price that's nice.
I know that, like, to find them, like, in stores is pretty hard, like, secondhand too. They're ridiculously rare. Especially the third game, which came out after... No, the second game came out after the third game or something. I can't remember, but it was really weird the way they did it here. And obviously you can buy it on iOS as well. Now,
yeah, I'm really happy that this is coming to 3DS because, I mean, the iOS version looks nice and all, but I can't bring myself to play long games on my phone.
Yeah. So basically, all of the games have had some small visual tweaks, so they don't look the same as, you know, their Game Boy Advance versions back in the day. and a lot of the typos from the translations and stuff have been fixed. So it's minor improvements. But, you know, I think it's kind of feels... you know, like, it's only $30 for all three, which is pretty reasonable, roughly.
Yeah, you'd pay that for one of the games on physical copy at this point.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty reasonable. I mean, I've played them all to death, and I probably couldn't play them again, because I know all the twists and stuff. It kind of ruins it. But yeah, it's good for people who, you know, want to play it but haven't, and then they can jump straight into, you know... They don't really need to play Apollo Justice, but they can jump straight into 5, which is, you know, eShop only, so... Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do.
So yeah, on top of that, Nintendo, I don't know if you guys remember when Donkey Kong Country kind of disappeared from the eShop.
That was a sad day.
And we all thought
Virtual Console.
Yeah, we were like, maybe like it's licensing like with Rare and stuff and it got complicated or something like that. But obviously it wasn't that. They just did it.
They've worked everything out.
Yeah, they must have. Maybe it was that and they've worked it out since. But yeah, it would basically now...
I was going to say it'd be interesting to know if Nintendo had been talking with Rare behind the scenes, so to speak.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe I feel Phil like Spencer. Surely Donkey Kong is... Well, yeah, Phil Spencer seems more of a reasonable person than, say,
so maybe,
else.
Yeah, maybe he's actually talked to Nintendo.
But
that
then, I don't know,
cool.
Like, because it's Donkey Kong is their IP, and, you know, I'm sure these games... I really want to know, you know, what the licensing deal is with this series of games, but anyway,
it's probably more complicated than we could even comprehend.
Possibly not
point.
As complicated as GoldenEye on the 64.
So basically, the Super Nintendo Donkey Kong Country games, which I think are pretty well regarded still.
Reasonably well regarded. Some people like them, I hear.
I know some people hate them. They think they're overrated.
Well, they're wrong.
I know.
Yeah, the third one is actually masterpiece platforming design, so those people can go away.
The second one is my favourite, but I love the third one too. I reckon that's really underrated. But anyway, they're all available on Wii U right now, so you can play them, yay, on your...
And interestingly enough, I've heard that they're available on the regular Wii eShop as well.
What?
Oh, really?
Or not that. It's not even the eShop. It's the Wii Shop channel. Apparently, they reappeared.
Oh.
It might be something to do because if you bought them back when you could on the Wii Shop channel. I've got to stop calling it the eShop. But, now you can get the discounts on the current versions, so maybe they had to reactivate them so discounts would work. I don't know. Just guessing.
I originally bought Donkey Kong Country 2 on the Wii Shop, and it just still sits there on my SD card. And, yeah, it's such a weird situation, to be honest.
I'm happy that I could upgrade them all for, like, $1.60. I have them on the Wii U now. It's just nicer.
On top of that, on the 3DS, the Donkey Kong Land games are also being released on the Virtual Console, so I never played them. I don't know if they're as good.
Did you, Ben?
I played a tiny bit of Donkey Kong Land, like, a couple of years ago. And it's just really strange. It's all green, and it's really hard to get past that graphical barrier.
I feel like they're too old, you know?
I can never quite work out what they are, because the first level of each of the ones that I've played seems like the first level of the equivalent Donkey Kong Country game.
Yeah,
it's
a weird derivation from there on.
I don't know how much they changed, and I've just never bothered playing anymore.
You know,
I think they're different, but I don't know. I think to me it shows just how good the art and stuff is in the country games, because, you know, they stand up so well still today. Whereas these other ones are just a little bit, like, too lo-fi for me.
They're just ugly. Come out and say it.
they really couldn't do that 3D rendered look on that few pixels.
Well, you know what's interesting on the Game Boy Advance, Donkey Kong Country 3, the music was completely and utterly different. So there's two soundtracks for Donkey Kong Country 3. I thought that was an interesting tidbit, but
even the Game Boy Advance ones don't look as good.
Yeah, they had to be all, like, super brightened up because of the no backlit screen to start with. There was a Game Boy Color Donkey Kong Country as well.
Oh, was there?
Yeah. Wow.
They really hauled that out.
They really did.
So the promotion started in the 16th of October, so you've probably seen it already. But if you haven't, by the time you hear this, you've probably got one day left. If you buy one of the Donkey Kong Virtual Console games, you can get the 3D game, Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D, for 33% cheaper. Or you can get Tropical Freeze, which is one of the best platformers ever made.
It is so good.
33% cheaper as well. So if you don't have them already, which I would be surprised if you didn't, but that's a really good way to get them cheaper.
I don't have them already.
Oh, what? I'm talking about Tropical Freeze. What?
He owned it for a little while and then traded it in like the dirty peasant he is.
Let's not go into it here.
Stephen, put that on your Christmas list. Get someone to buy it for you.
That's actually a good idea.
I think I'll buy them, the SNES ones, because they're really good. They're just really good to come back to, and they still feel good, and the soundtracks are just like no other. Like,
yeah, I honestly feel like I'll probably replay them over the summer break, because they're a fun game. All three of them are great.
I think they're better to sit down and play with another person than the original Mario games.
Yeah, definitely.
I find it more enjoyable. It's just so much easier to sort of just steamroll through the levels, and Mario just sometimes gets a bit tiring sitting with another friend, but Donkey Kong is just always just so easy to just sit with, I guess. Yeah.
Yes.
And then finally, this has been something that I don't have been following it that much, but I can just tell from what everyone's been saying that people are waiting for this to be, you know, discussed.
Just from my screaming.
Shovel Knight is going to finally arrive in Australia on Wii U in November.
Oh, thank God.
I don't think they've given us an exact date, though.
No, I don't think they have, but, you know, we've got 30 potential days. That's less than it could have been before.
Yeah, so...
Sorry. Oh, clearly you love Shovel Knight.
It's been rated, it's all ready. I've heard really good things from people who have played it. Like, it's a really good, you know, it feels old school, but it's not old school to the point where it is unplayable.
I've heard heaps of people just say that they're, you know, it's high on their contention list of game of the year, and I just can't believe I haven't been able to play it yet.
Have you played it yet, Ben?
I've wanted to cave into the PC version, but the I don't know, it'd just be nice to have on the Wii U because he had any gamepad, so it'd be kind of portable.
Yeah.
And around lounge or whatever, obviously. And also on the television. I don't know. I mean, it'd be just nice to have it on a Nintendo console because it looks Nintendo-y to me, at Castle.
Because PCs are annoying.
Well, sometimes, yes. And the fact that it looks like a Mega Man Castlevania mashup is cool as well. So, I don't know. Just having that on Nintendo would be cooler for me. I still think that way sometimes.
Cool. Yeah, so moving on to miscellaneous news, because we didn't know where else to put it. Captain Toad Treasure Tracker is finally dated. It's coming to Australia on January 10th, so I believe it's a month after America gets it.
I mean, that's not so bad, considering we all thought it was like, oh, early 2015, and people are thinking, oh, God, it's going to be February. So
yeah, but really,
January's
what's the
not
point?
As bad. Yeah.
But you know what? Now that I think about it, Captain Toad was due at first or second week of December, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
And isn't that when Smash Bros. Was going to come out in Australia? Like, did
yes.
they move this back for Smash Bros., but now they've moved Smash Bros. Back?
Forward,
you know what I mean?
Forward, you mean?
Like, that. I don't think they wanted to bring out Smash Bros. And Captain Toad at the same time.
Yeah. Maybe?
Because in America, obviously, Smash Bros. Comes out in late November, which it does for us now, too. But then in America, Captain Toad comes out in December. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I see what you're saying. I don't know. Maybe.
Anyway,
it's so, cheap, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of annoyed. I want to play it, but, like, it's, like, so far away, kind of. Not really. Anyway, it's going to be launched at a budget price, apparently. I don't really call this a budget price, but it is. So it's $59.95, which is $20 less than what Nintendo usually puts their games out at.
So it'll be $40 at Big W.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Probably, like, $44.
Nah, that's a big discount, but we'll see. So yeah, they also revealed that Toadette will be in it. Have you guys seen that 40-minute analysis video about this game?
No.
I watched 10 minutes. It's ridiculous how much detail this guy goes into. Have you ever heard of the channel? It's called Game Explain or something?
Yes. That's who I thought you were going to be talking about.
He spends 40 minutes working out when Toadette gets taken and when she comes back and, like, how many times you fight the boss. And it's crazy good detail. Like, I wonder how much of it's true, but I was
It's fun
impressed.
To watch either way.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm not going to spend the whole 40 minutes doing it, but, yeah, the first 10 minutes I watched was good.
I just got addicted to their Smash Bros. Analyses.
It got me excited for this game as well, more so than anything Nintendo did, too.
I know that I know that they're riffing on Super Mario 3D World, but I'd like to see if they did something cool like a Subcon-style level, because that's where Toad sort of got his big debut, I guess.
Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah, that'd be kind of cool if they did.
With like an
homage.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
I kind of feel like, didn't we? I think we talked about this back in for the E3 episode, but didn't we spot lots of Mario 2 references? Was that this game?
Maybe.
I know that he pulls out turnips out of the ground.
I can't remember what it was, but yeah, it's interesting to see if they will do that. Because I like when they do that. Like, with New Super Mario Bros. 2, even though it wasn't that good, like, there was a lot of Super Mario Bros. 3 throwbacks.
Hmm.
I would like it if they did that.
Guess we'll find out on January 10th.
Yes.
Well,
probably earlier than that.
I think it'd be a good opportunity to sort of, because each of the levels to me looks like more or less a vignette of Mario references, essentially. And then the enemies look like they're riffs on other classic Mario enemies. It's kind of like a weird alternate Mario.
It's a Termina of Mario.
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be good to see if they... Because, like, New Super Mario Bros. Wii U, to me, was more of a Super Mario World homage. And then Super Mario 3D Land on the 3DS looked like it was trying to take a lot of elements of Super Mario Bros. 3, just in, like, feel and atmosphere. So it'll be good to see if this incorporates a lot of elements from a lot of the different takes on Mario's, you know, universe. So
it'll
I'm
cool.
excited, very
I'm,
excited.
Yeah, I am too. Like, I think, and January is a time when, like, you're kind of like you're either getting through your backlog or you're bored because you've played it all. So
yeah,
it will be a good thing to pick up.
Yeah,
you know?
Right after the Christmas rush as well.
Yeah. So yeah, it's coming, and we have a date, which is nice. And then, you know, that will probably, once all these games are done, you know, it'll start opening up the floodgate for all the other stuff they've announced, like Splatoon and Yoshi and all that jazz. So.
And I really hope exciting. I really hope it sells well, especially with that budget price point.
Yeah, I mean, it is a Wii U game, but hopefully. I mean, I'm interested to see how Bayonetta does and stuff, but we'll see. I feel like it's doing well, anecdotally, but anyway. So, on top of that, Nintendo have announced that they've returned to profitability in their latest financial results. So their second quarter results are out, and that's from, you know, April to September, so that includes the Mario Kart launch, and I believe the... Yeah, just the Mario Kart launch, and I guess the Japanese Smash Bros. Launch. So Nintendo made a net profit at the end of the day, but they were still at a loss of 215 million yen, so that basically means they made less money. So sales were down, but they were still profitable. Yeah?
I think so, yeah. I mean, yeah. Maybe we should ask our financial expert.
I'm sorry, I don't give financial advice. I don't hold RG146.
That's an accountant joke.
I don't get it.
But you're probably right, James, I'm guessing.
So basically, apparently Nintendo have been able to reduce costs, the US currency has become stronger, and they haven't had to restructure, because you know how they spent the last whole year restructuring and stuff? Apparently that costs a lot of money, but that's all done now, so it's all behind them. You know, Wii U sales are up, with Mario Kart 8 and Hyrule Warriors pushing software up to 10 million, or 9.4, sorry. I just rounded pretty generously. So it's an improvement over the original 3.1 million. So that's like a, what, 300% increase, 200%?
Yeah, like, yeah. Base compared to that 3.
Really good amounts.
Yes.
3DS sales were down, which kind of makes sense, because, you know, they're starting to prep a new 3DS, more or less. So, yeah, it's... And obviously, this report doesn't take into account sales outside of Japan. So, I feel like Smash Bros. Would be a pretty healthy boost to their to their financial earnings, because, you know, it seems to be doing really well, even though people just want the Wii U version now. I think things are getting better. Like, sales are down, but profitability is up, and that's what keeps them afloat, right?
Well, if they've been able to keep afloat through all the, you know, various crises that they've been going through. Having them return to a positive point would just be, like, who knows what's going to happen to their catalog lineup now, or, you know, maybe we'll be seeing, you know, an extra 30 or 40% of games released from Nintendo.
Well, they have, like, as we know, like, with Hyrule Warriors, they've said they will start farming out their stuff to people, but they won't, they'll try, I hope they will keep it, you know, some kind of quality to it. Like,
yeah. Not just other RAM, everything.
Not just farm Mario out to, like,
Team Ninja?
I don't know.
Team Ninja is just a scapegoat for everything.
I'm trying to think of, like, just a terrible developer. Like, the guy who makes that letter game on the Wii U eShop. Have you guys heard of that?
What?
It's a game that costs, like, $7 and lasts about an hour. And it's, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or they could farm it out to the developer of Meme Run.
Yes, they should.
Or maybe they can hand, like, F-Zero to someone completely Zelda. Random, like, From Software.
Oh, holy shit.
And it would just be like...
You thought F-Zero GX was hard.
On the 21st of November, we will be getting... It's the 21st, right? I'm not just saying this. I'm pretty sure it is. But anyway, I hope it is. But if I'm wrong...
Yeah, I think you're right now that I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So on the 21st of November, Australia is getting the new 3DS and the new 3DS XL. As you may or may not be aware, we're getting it before America and Europe... around the same time as Japan, I think. And people are like, well, why are they doing this? In that voice.
Let's complain about a good thing.
Yeah. So, Nintendo have kind of talked about why. I don't think...
In a really, really roundabout way that really didn't tell us anything we didn't know already.
Yeah. I mean, I recommend reading the article on the site because it's a little bit... it's very wordy, but we read it and we kind of talked about it before we recorded this episode. And from what we can tell, they're basically saying that the 3DS sales were kind of starting to get lower here and in Japan. So they thought, you know, the new console will revitalize it and allow more people to buy Smash Bros. And Pokemon and all those new games that are coming out. I don't know how... It's so hard to decide how successful this is going to be. Because, you know, I know a lot of people are like, what's the difference? Like, they think... And it's not like Apple, where they can bring out a new iPad every year. Call it the new iPad 1 year, and people will still, you know, kind of know about it, you know?
Yeah.
It's bad because... I've got an anecdote here where I was in Rockingham, which is near Perth, to make it a bit more global for anyone who's listening. And
which is in Australia.
Yeah, yeah. On Earth. Milky Way Sector. Anyway, I was paging through all the pre-owned DS games, and probably early 20s couple came in, and the girl was looking at the DS and 3DS, and she said, "What's the difference? Why?"
That's still a thing that people are not sure about.
She said 3DS and DS, are they the same? And I just, obviously, I walked away.
just get out.
Yeah. But still, it just demonstrates that people will not take the time to read and think and, you know, critically analyse it like, you know,
and
we might do.
People still think the Wii U is a handheld.
Yeah, it's so problematic. So now they're introducing another one with barely any explanation.
By the end of next year, on the shelves, you're going to have... Well, maybe not. Maybe they'll stop doing some stuff, because they are the same price, which makes me think they'll replace the old 3DSs. But anyway, you've got a 3DS, a 3DS XL, a new 3DS, a new 3DS XL, and then you're going to have DS, 3DS, and new 3DS games.
And 2DS.
Yeah,
the 2DS as well. And then you've got the second-hand units that they still sell, which is, DS, DS Lite, DSi, DSi XL... It's just like, there's so much, like, just
I
give
feel
it a-
like the best way to sell the new 3DS would be to put an old one next to the new one and just look at it. Like, the 3D is so much better, but it's very hard to communicate that without actually physically seeing it.
Have you seen one of the new ones?
Yeah, I tried Vuk's Japanese one.
Oh, that's
one.
Right, yeah. I forgot he had one. Yeah, so basically, from what I can understand, the reason they decided to bring it to Australia is because, you know, the sales were probably more front-loaded here, so maybe they died down pretty quickly.
And we're a bit of a low-risk market as well. Like, if it doesn't go crazy in sales, then they only had to make, 100 3DSs to satisfy us?
Yeah, and that's something else I was thinking, too, that I talked about before, and you guys were like, oh, there's a conspiracy, but it's... I don't know, it's not.
We are the conspiracy cast.
I think that Nintendo, like, you know, kind of... They produced heaps. They were like, okay, we can probably get enough for another market. Where should we send them? And then they're like, yeah, let's send them to Australia. And then
They were region-free, they could send the same ones. They wouldn't even have to put new firmware on.
Back away from that, Stephen.
I think that, you know, that's reflected by the fact they don't come with a charger. Like, it's just literally the quickest and dirtiest way they could get them here.
Just put a different label on the box.
I still don't like that it's not with a charger. That just rubs me all the wrong ways.
That's really weird. Like, that's going to confuse so many people. I guess the burden's going to be on salespeople. It's like, oh, do you have a charger?
Yeah, but yeah,
then it's going to seem like they're upselling and people are going to just not feel good about it.
But then people get like, oh, yeah, it's only $249. And then they're like, but you always have to pay $15 to get a charger. And that doesn't sound like much, but people see that shit and that... they step away from it. It's really weird. Like,
I mean, when you're saying like, yes, I have $250 and I want to spend $250, then it's like, oh, you need me to buy more. I can see why they get a little bit antsy. If you look at it from the outside view, it's nothing.
And if
$15,
you want a dock, it's $30, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes me sad.
Because that's the thing, like, the dock doesn't come with the charger. You have to get a charger for the dock, and then people...
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, so, like, it's $15 for the dock, but then that dock has to be plugged into with a charger, which is $15. Do you know what I mean? Like,
wow.
It's like the one that you get in the box now. You know what I mean? Like, how you have to plug the charger into it for it to work.
Yeah,
and suddenly, it's the same
but the charger's
thing.
Not
and suddenly,
in there.
But they're selling...
Suddenly in 2011, paying $350 for a console charger and dock doesn't seem so bad.
Yeah.
But now it's going to be 250 plus, so it'll be 200 and what? 50, 80.
280?
And then you're looking at a game on top of that, so...
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that retailers, if they want to sell this, they have to do bundles to really... Like, even if they chuck in a charger for free, but then that's the thing, no one will see value in that, because they'll be like, all the other ones came with a charger.
Yeah, so you're just giving me what I normally have.
Yeah, but then, like, because that's the thing, you know, they didn't come with chargers in America, I think it was, or was it the UK?
I think it's always just Japan that's always not had chargers.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. So, but because they've always had that, they're used to it, but now they're bringing them out here without them, so it's like... You know, it's just seems stupid. Especially when a Vita comes with a charger. Like, why can't they place a 3DS?
Yeah, but
the Vita is better.
But then the 3DS has about five times the amount of interesting games, so...
Yeah, well...
Hey, anime dating sims. You can't discount their quality.
Yes, stripped and undressed.
They need to bring Hatterful Boyfriend to 3DS.
They do.
3D plumage.
I want to date a bird.
Okay.
Anyway.
So then, just
how did
to finish,
we even get there?
Yeah, I don't know. We just went way off. To finish off this episode, the news. Nintendo have talked about their first. Remember they announced they were going to do a quality of life platform. Well, they've announced their first thing. It will be a sleep aid. What have they said? They said something about it's not going to be wearable. It's not going to be. It's like not. They had five like knots. I don't know how to explain it. I saw the image the other day, but I didn't.
It says five non, and then just a whole bunch of Japanese characters.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
The question is, will this come bundled in with a vitality sensor?
Maybe it is a vitality sensor. You just like put it on your finger when you go to sleep.
It's just been read.
And you can feel like you're in hospital every day.
Maybe the vitality sensor never died. It just morphed into this weird concept.
Maybe the vitality sensor is the Wii U.
Ooh, maybe the Wii U's had a motion sensor and camera in it all along and been watching you sleep for quality of life.
Yeah. So basically, this thing, I mean, I don't think it's got anything to do with games, so I don't know why we're really talking about it, but it's basically going to be, it's non-sensing, non-contact.
Hopefully it's non-wearable. Hopefully it's non-invasive. So
yeah, so non-wearable, so you don't have to wear it. Non-contact, so it doesn't touch your body. Non-operating, I don't know what that means. Non-waiting, so it's going to be quick. Non-installation, so basically it's going to be super, apparently, super,
seamless.
Yeah, easy to use. Nintendo are partnering with a US-based company called ResMed. They basically are involved in treating sleep disorders. Sleep apnea and stuff, and it's going to launch 2016. So they're basically, I don't think this is going to be games.
There's a quote from Iwata that says, by using our know-how in gaming to analyze sleep and fatigue, we can create something fun. So it sounds like they're like Wii Fit, but for sleeping. Like, I don't know, you can show your sleep graphs and do a sleep test every day.
His words kind of make me... Like, he said they were going to use their strength is to keep people engaged and entertained. So, I think that they want to try and keep people engaged in their health, and they think that they can do that somehow. Mm. They basically want to do what they did with Wii Fit, but beyond, I guess, on a much greater scale. You guys should see me. I'm waving my hands around just trying to explain it, but no one can see me, so there's no point.
Burn the disc, we're a video podcast.
So, yeah, I'm interested to see how it turns out. I really don't expect it to be anything to do with games, but it would be interesting to see if they could maybe, incorporate it into stuff like that.
Maybe it'll just invade your nightmares.
It could project
Zero.
It could project dreams into your mind, and then
I mean that doesn't touch you.
It's basically the Riddler from Batman Forever, but
thanks Nintendo.
Yeah, you get one of those boxes, and you just feed all your brain power to Iwata. Okay, so that's it for the news for this episode. We will go to a quick break and return to talk about the new releases, which are. There have been a lot, but we're going to just focus on Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2.
Yes.
And we're back. So, if you weren't aware, Bayonetta came out last weekend. It's the big major release that has hit since Hyrule Warriors, I guess. I could be wrong. But yeah, so we're going to talk about both of them, but more so Bayonetta 2, because Stephen hasn't actually played Bayonetta 2, because...
Hi.
Yeah. he's only played Bayonetta 1. So, it's... which it's cool. That's... Both of them are on Wii U now, like in the span of a month.
But, yeah, that's my favourite part is that both of them have come out so reasonably priced. It's like you almost feel obligated to buy it because you get a second free game with it anyway.
Yeah, and they kind of form a perfect. Like, it's hard to explain, but you could probably play the first one after finishing the second one and it would still make sense. I can't say much
they
more.
They just tie into each other well.
Yeah, they do. And, like, as terrible as the story is, they still do tie it into each other world.
You're freely admitting this. The story is terrible.
Yeah, the story is terrible. Like, and you guys know that I'm a ridiculous, like, Platinum Games fanboy, but, like, the story is so shit. Like,
James,
there were so many times in Bayonetta 2 where I was just like, oh.
James, the story isn't that bad, love.
No! See, this is the problem. Okay, let's talk about the story quickly. In Bayonetta 1, it's a little bit less upfront. I feel like in Bayonetta 2, it was almost Metal Gear Solid levels, where, not in terms of length of cutscenes, but frequency of interruption. Like, there were so many times where I was just like, fuck up, I just want to shoot, like, you know, play. And it didn't help that, you know, they've introduced this new annoying kid character who has this terrible accent, and, like, which Ben was just imitating, and he's just so boring, and, like, I don't know, I just think the story is really average. Like, I liked the mystery of who is the masked sage, who we're obviously not going to talk about here, but yeah, it's like that kept me going, I guess, from watching everything to see what was going on. But yeah, the story was just really bad. I'm not a fan of it at all. Like, I liked the first one. I kind of liked how both of them talk about, kind of touch on that theme of, like, motherly kind of stuff, you know, because in the first one you had, oh, I just realised I can't talk about it because Steven hasn't finished it.
I'm sorry.
You know, in the first one, hey, you had the little girl, and Bayonetta, you know, was drawn to this little girl, and then in this one, it kind of, Bayonetta,
like,
was
a baby.
Is almost, yeah, it was almost like a mother to Loki, the little boy character as well. So, like, I like that kind of thing. It kind of reminds me of, like, it's kind of probably pretentious to link these two things, but, you know, Ripley and Newt in Aliens, like, I could get that kind of dynamic.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Is much more, you know, over the top, ridiculous than Ripley is.
Yeah, but they both share the whole empowered woman side of things, I think. Yeah, in my opinion, anyway.
But yeah, like, I don't, like, the story is not the best, so we shouldn't dwell on it too much, but, I mean, Stephen, what do you think of Bayonetta from what you've played?
I really, really, really like the combat. Like, I had not really played Bayonetta much before, and basically Revengeance was pretty much my only Platinum Games experience, and this is hitting exactly the same, I don't know, something in my mind that I just want to keep playing it, but then it was 3 a.m, so I had to stop playing it.
It's very, like, it's so... Are you playing Wii U, obviously?
Yes, yeah.
It's very, like, I don't know how to explain it, but everything just flows really well.
Yeah, I really like the rhythm of it. Like, you could see you'd had just enough time to dodge attacks, but when you dodge attacks, then you can do even better attacks back, and it's just a constant back and forth.
And I think, like, witch time is just one of those things. Mm. Like, it's so simple, but it's so good.
You can nail that so many times, and it's still enjoyable every time.
And that's the thing, like, it doesn't break the game, but at the same time, and it's easy to pull off, but it's still got this element, like, of, like, you can't do it all the time perfectly. Mm. Kind of, it's not like, I
and even if you can, it's not a win button. You still have to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Once you're in
and
witch,
like,
time,
you can even still dodge. You don't have to witch time all the time, you know. And for people who don't know, witch time is where if Bayonetta dodges an attack at the last minute, the time will slow down, so you can, you know, beat down enemies a little bit more than what you usually could, because, you know, they're slow. In the second one, there's another version of it called Light Speed, but that's an unlockable thing. It's kind of cool, but I won't talk about that too much. But yeah, like, it's just those simple things, and then, you know, it's just so over the top, like the torture attacks,
yeah,
which are a really good way to finish off your characters, like your enemies, sorry, really quickly, because I find myself really saving up the torture attacks and then using it instantly on something that I have trouble with usually, you know, to get rid of them, just to get, you know, save myself the time and effort.
Yeah.
We'll start kind of talking about the second game a little bit more, but the combat in the second game definitely flows better. I don't know how they do it, but it just feels much quicker.
Mm.
But at the same time, I do feel like maybe some of the difficulties lost a little bit in the process. I don't know if you agree with me or not, Ben.
I know that you have a penchant for putting those sort of games on the ultimate sort of difficulty, and I know that, like, Devil May Cry and Bayonetta have that. I think I've read it before, it's not a true game until you put it on the highest difficulty. That's how it's meant to be played.
yeah. Like, I think, I read a lot of people were playing it through on first climax, which is the lowest difficulty, and they, and you know, they're just doing that to unlock everything, because you're meant to play through the game hard with all weapons from the beginning. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because that's how the game was made.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing that, but, because I wanted to play it just hard from the beginning, just to see how good it was, but, yeah, I don't know. It's like I said this in my review, but it's one of those games where someone who's button mashing and stuff can probably get through it. Like they'll just get like, you know, stone awards and stuff. But then there's people like it goes so like the skill ceiling is just so high. Like there's so much to learn about this game, like to play it properly and effectively.
Yeah, I feel that the complexity is up there with your, you know, in terms of the not so much how it's executed in game. But how it's designed, it's up there with sort of pro fighting games, essentially. You know, like the combos and your timings and everything like that. You can structure all the fights to come out perfectly at the end if you want to. You could spend over an hour on one fight just to get that pure platinum award, if that's what you wanted. And that's obviously what gives some people their kicks. So I think it's good that it can appeal to everyone, and that the Umbran climax, I think, where you get the extra Wicked Weave attacks... That just makes it a lot easier for you, obviously, your newbies to this sort of series to just, you know, get through to the big boss battles and just really enjoy themselves and, you know, have a good ride, essentially.
Yeah, but even, like, that's the Umbran climax stuff, that when I first heard about that, I was like, oh, they're just doing a devil trigger. Like, that's why would they do that? And then, like, I've been using it a lot more recently because I kind of didn't want to use it because I thought it would make the game too easy, but it doesn't really. Like, it's a boost.
Yeah.
But then it's not. And, you know, the thing is, you know, it's tied to your magic, which is also what your torture attacks are tied to. So if you want to play it the old way, you still can just use torture attacks. You don't have to use your Umbran climax, you know?
Exactly.
And I like that there's that choice.
Yeah.
In both of those things.
It does open the game up, so I don't think anyone can complain about that, because it gives you that choice if you want to, you know, play it old school, essentially.
Like a Devil May Cry game, which...
Yeah, you've got the option to, so... I definitely...
So basically...
Yeah, I definitely feel it was fine-tuned. Yeah, the combat was just perfect.
Yeah. For people who don't know, like, the whole thing with Bayonetta is like... She has... Her power is, like... Her hair is a conduit for these demons that she's made deals with. So, like... It's really hard to explain, but, like... Say, every time you finish off a combo, like... It'll be done with, like, a giant foot or a giant hand or something. And that will be the demon's hand that you've made the deal with, right? So, like... And that's called a Wicked Weave, because it's made from a hair. You know, weave is a term of hair. And when you turn on Umbran Climax, it makes all your attacks have Wicked Weaves, like every single punch. And then there's an Infernal Weave, which is the big finishing, where it usually summons a giant demon that does a big amount of damage.
And I like that it's very varied now, because I feel... Wasn't in Bayonetta, it was only Madame Butterfly, as in the giant witch?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she was the main one. I think in this one they've definitely like improved it. Like with the whips, that's a frog's tongue whenever you use that one.
Yeah,
you
know, and then it will appear and it'll be a huge giant slimy toad, or it will be a giant infernal dog or dragon, and it just makes it's utterly insane.
Yeah, and then there's I'm trying to think what else there was. There's like the Kafka, the bow. It's a giant dragonfly thing.
Oh, really?
That's the only weapon I don't really use that much.
I struggled to find how it was useful, because you have to stay away from enemies to use it effectively, and she's most effective when she's up in her face. So,
exactly. And then you know it launches dragonflies at people, which looks cool, but like they don't do much damage. Have you played with any of the optional costumes, Stephen?
I have. I played with the Samus costume, and I just loved the sound that it was taken straight out of Super Metroid when you shot.
That was fantastic. So lo-fi, but perfect. I thought they'd take something from Prime or Other M in terms of the laser sounds, but it was an amazing homage. I love it.
And then if you play that into that costume, the Samus costume has screw attack when you double jump, and you can roll around in your morph ball.
Nice.
So good.
I tried to do that thing where you put the visor up and down, but it didn't seem to work. Is that just in two?
Isn't it the D-pad?
I tried the D-pad and it wasn't doing anything, but maybe I'm wrong.
I haven't played the first one, to be honest. Like, I'm too far Yeah, the second one's so much better.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, what I love is, like, the weapons are just so crazy and over the top. Like, in the first game, you've got a typical sword and stuff, but then you've got, you know, ice skates that shoot ice or make ice. You've got batons that are also rocket launchers. I can't remember what else is in the first game. But then in this one, you know, they just go so much further ahead. Like, instead of one sword, they give you two. Like, you get boots, you get whips in the first game, which was a snake. But in this one, you get boots that have whips. Like, it's just so ridiculous and so over the top. Like, a scythe that has three blades that are obviously alive to some extent. And, you know, that's a very heavy weapon. But then you can also launch the blades from that scythe.
I think the best part about Bayonetta 2 is that they've grabbed onto what they know now. They've established Bayonetta as a character. They've established the gameplay, and now they've sort of just gone with that, and with like no apologies. Yeah. Like I remember there was a time early on where I think the moon came out, and then the camera panned across to the front of a cathedral, and anyone who's played the first Bayonetta would know. Oh right, I think what was that ability called, where she can obviously defy gravity.
Oh, Witchwalk.
Witchwalk, that's right. I was going to say Moonwalk, but that would sound like an idiot. stop. Anyway, like it sort of just lets you know that this is what you can do. Hopefully you've got this from the first game, or for a new player, it'd be enough of a cue. But they don't sort of explain in that way. And like we now know that Bayonetta is an Umbran witch, and we know her backstory. So they sort of dive straight into the story as well, as bad as it or campy as it might be. So
yeah, no, I know.
I think it was a great a way for it to be iterative. That doesn't explain everything again. It sort of just puts you in the middle of it, and you start off, you know, battling a dragon on top of a skyscraper in the first level. So
and that thing is, it's that's the dragon that you use throughout the entirety of the first game. Like, and it's just like, I mean, it's not really spoilers to talk about that, but basically something is up with the demons that Bayonetta is summoning. Like, this one in particular didn't obey her like it usually does, and you battle it. It's the first boss battle, which is the enemy that you've used to kill all those bosses in the first game. Like, it's kind of full circle-y, kind of. But actually, it is full circle, the more that I think about it. But yeah, it's just really well done.
Yeah,
and there's so many parts where I'm like, whoa, this is just like so over the top. And you can just tell that they sat down there and they're like, okay, this is a battle with, you know, one of the sages, the Lumen Sage. Like, how can we make this more crazy? It's like, how about we get both of them to summon a demon each and have them battle in the background while we're having our battle down the front? Like, they didn't need to do that.
It was so good. I didn't even know where to look.
I want to see everything at once. You forget that you're fighting a battle like in the foreground, because in the background you've got these two giant dickheads like battling it out. It's just crazy.
Yeah,
like
it was amazing. It was just a blast.
The first major boss battle after is, you know, a giant snake thing, angel snake thing that is like, and you're fighting it while surfing on a piece of debris from this just broken building on a water spout thing. Like, it's just like so over the top.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not, and the strangest thing is, like, despite this, you don't have any problem following it. Like, it doesn't become a mess that you just can't see through. Like, it's just so easy to play.
Yeah, it was just so well designed from start to finish. Except I had a bit of a problem with the flying sections. Not the flying sections where you're attacking. I think it was near the end of the game where you're firing out beams, and it was just I found that a little bit dry.
Some people call them the gimmicky sections. They're pretty annoying. I know in the first game the Space Harrier stuff, a lot of people hated that. I didn't like that either. But some people loved it too. So
yeah.
And I kind of feel like, and that's something that's interesting to talk about, is in the first game, there's a lot of Sega throwbacks, but in this one, there's a lot of Nintendo stuff they talk, like, you know, about Fat Italians and, what else? They said something the other day that
sometimes when you go into Rodan's Bar, it's like, I'm playing this crazy game, we have to sprinkle some magic powder on a chicken. I thought that was great.
Yeah, like, there's so many little Nintendo touches there, which are really cool. And yeah, like, it's just so good.
Yeah,
like,
it's just
and I was reading, you know, a few blogs and stuff before the game came out, because I was, you know, bored, and they were talking about how they really tried to make it so that, because in the first game, when you hit enemies and stuff, they would react, but not much. But in this game, like, they've completely redone the animations for everyone. Like, the when you hit an enemy, depending on where you hit them and how you hit them, like, it'll change the way that they react and stuff. So a lot of enemies feel more alive.
Yeah, and that's something, and that's that, something a lot of people wouldn't even look at, yeah, because it would just be so much more satisfying that you and you don't know what it is. This is a feedback to your brain that fires off some synapse, but you're enjoying yourself more as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, you know, how much extra work would that have taken them to do that? And they still did. And there's a team who's so small, that's what I don't get, like, and, you know, they're probably working on, compared to other games, a shoestring budget, like, and they just have so much care and attention to detail to this kind of stuff. Mm. It's, it really is just crazy, like.
Yeah, and...
And then you have, and I mean, in terms of, like, the graphics, the, it's, because Bayonetta 2 uses more of, like, a bluey kind of, purpley kind of hue to it, I guess, whereas the first game was more of a red and black, and the blue and the purple is so much more better for the eyes.
Yeah, and I felt that the architecture and the city of the Noatun that you hang around for most of the game, it was, you know, always alive, and it felt like a really good place to explore. I was going to find the Muspelheim portals every time. I was finding the invisible Umbran witch treasure chests, because I just wanted to do everything that I could. And
I mean, that's the thing, yeah, there's exploration too, like, you wouldn't really expect there to be a lot of it in this game, but there is, like, you wouldn't find one of the weapons if you didn't explore, that's it, like, they're not all on the beaten path.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
I mean? Which is cool. And it is, like, going back to Bayonetta 1, it's really hard to play, because it just does, no, it's not, okay, no, it's not hard to play, but to look at, it's just really drab compared to this.
Yeah, I haven't had an opportunity to make that comparison yet, but I would definitely feel but that, like, even it'd be hard to move back.
You could do
this.
It. Yeah, if anyone doesn't have the game, like, do it right now. Go and look up screenshots of Bayonetta, and I'm telling you, you can tell which screenshots are from Bayonetta 2. Mm. Because, you know, the colours are just so much more brighter, so much more vibrant and stuff. Like, it just looks so much better. Mm. And, I mean, speaking of which, I think the design for Bayonetta now is much better too. Like, she looks more like a human being. Like, I mean, obviously not proportion-wise, but...
Yeah, I'm still thrown off by her weirdly long legs every time. And not to the point of, oh, like, so sexy, as in, that's kind of disturbing.
Yeah, but even, like, her haircut and her outfit and stuff, they just look less,
She looks more modern.
She just looks more like a... I don't know, she looks more like a person to me. Like, in the first game, it's kind of made me think of her in the first game as more of, like, not an object, but, like, just, you know, a playable character in a video game, but in this one I feel like she's more of a person, just because she looks more realistic.
I like what they've done. This is the way I looked at it. In the first game, they're establishing that she's an ancient witch and she's found herself, you know, that she's a witch, essentially. You don't need to go into more detail on that, because it would be a little bit spoilery. But in this game, she's kind of, in my opinion, sort of adjusted to, you know, modern life, and now that she realises that she can just, you know, live amongst the other people and the humans... She's
like Christmas shopping in the opening
scene. She's become more modern, and she's integrated into that. She doesn't have to be, you know, half a century old witch anymore. She can be herself, sort of thing. So I think that's good in that she's sort of obviously discovered her own character, and obviously a bit more, another, you know, great addition to Platinum Games' lineup of characters. In that, Bayonetta was obviously already a character before Bayonetta 2, obviously, but.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think it's just cool in that she's essentially integrated into modern life. That's the way I see it, story wise.
She just, like, it's, and it's weird because even though she was ridiculously over the top and confident in the first game, in this one that she feels even more so.
Yeah,
like she just, like, you know, summons things with, like, little to no effort. You know, like her guns and stuff. Like, it's just really, really, really crazy.
Mm.
The story is a little bit more personal, I guess, but that's the point. But the story really isn't the highlight here. And that's the thing as well. Like, I just like how it keeps throwing all these different enemies at you. Like, it's not...
Yeah, I actually made the comment, because, like, I was sitting with my partner, and I was playing through, and I was about 3 or 4 hours in. There was just, like, this whole slew of new enemies. Every time I went around another corner, the book opened up again, introduced a new enemy, whether it's Accolade or Acceptance or whichever new angel it happened to be. And I was like, they just keep throwing the enemies at you. And then they bring in infernals as well. Infernal enemies.
Yeah, so you've got demons and angels now. And they all look... Like, I've not been a... I'm not a huge fan of the designs. Like, I mean, I am. But, like, they're very... what's the word? Like, Steven would know, maybe. But, like, because
I don't know what you're talking about, like, so I'm no help.
No, no, in Bayonetta 1, it's the same. Like, the angels are very... They're, like, very blinged out, kind of. Like, almost...
That's definitely the word for it.
There's a word that I'm trying to find, like... I don't know, a little bit almost too like polar. Garish, but not. I don't know, maybe
they're
it's...
like, over-designed or something?
Gaudy. Yeah. You're looking for Gaudy.
Gaudy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like, the angels are especially, like... Not, you notice it especially after you start fighting demons in Bayonetta 2. I don't know, I like the design. It fits them, but it's just so busy. Like, especially the bosses busy, yes. and stuff. Like, there's that boss with the upside-down head and the two snakes in the first game.
Yeah, I never liked
him. The first one you find. You know, like, he's just so over the top. Which is, I mean, it may kind of make sense, because they're meant to be...
To be personal. To be honest, I found the, oh, I can't remember his name, but he has no head, but he holds up a blade with a face in it at the hilt.
Oh, Valiant.
Yeah, Valiant. And he just keeps... He holds up the blade with his two arms level, and that's when he's talking. But then when you attack him, you'll attack the face and the blade, which eventually peels off to, like, reveal muscly, gross interior. That always disturbs me. Like, I find it quite...
Yeah, it's such a weird, like...
It's really gross,
and Steven,
actually.
You'll notice this in the first game, too. Like, the angels, like, they all have this really, really, like, you know, perfect exterior. Like, you know, white porcelain faces, you know, gold... accents on all their arms and stuff, but then as you start damaging them and stuff, underneath it is, it's all gross and like rotting flesh. It's really weird. Like, I know it's probably, you know, on purpose, like a commentary of some
cryptic
sort.
Metaphor.
Yeah. And I love how, you know, when they talk to you in this voice that you know makes sense to them, but like, because they're so, you know, they're literally, you know, these higher beings, you can't understand what they're saying, you know? Like, that's... Mm. Because they talk to... I don't know what it is. It's like Simlish, but not. It's just like loud, booming noise that doesn't really make sense. But yeah,
I think it's meant to echo like some sort of like scripture type. I think they're meant to be really close to some sort of Leviticus interpretation or something. It's really ancient, holy beings.
Yeah, well, they are. Yeah. Because that's what they are, apparently. Yeah. Like, these things apparently exist, even though... We know they don't, but yeah. And there's even like a lot of cool references and stuff to like Wonderful 101. Like, I don't know if you've read like the files for some of the enemies, but they're like Valiant's Valiantium blade is super powerful or something. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, Valiantium, that's like, what's his name? Wonder Blue from, you know,
and 101. And they even straight out said that blade will be later be used by one of 100 heroes to defend the Earth. It actually just straight out said it. Yeah, it wasn't even subtle.
Cool. It's a cool thing. Yeah, but it's still cool.
Absolutely.
Like, they didn't have to do that. But yeah, it's just really good. There's so much more that I could probably say about it, but I won't.
We'd be here for the next day or two.
Yeah. Easily.
Do a let's play.
No.
Tell us your thoughts
like
as you play.
And then there's other things that they did for number two that's just crazy. Like, tag climax mode is just so... They didn't have to do this, you know, like, for people who don't know, it's a two-player co-op game, and, you know, you both, basically, as you play through the game, you unlock what they call verse cards, because each thing is like a verse, each battle is known as a verse for some reason, like it's a Bible, I don't know.
Bible verse.
Yeah, and, you know, you have, I think there's up to 55 different verses that you can unlock, and then when you go and you search for a partner, you both join the game, and then you pick your outfit, your character, because there's different characters you can play as that have different abilities, and their weapons, and then you find a partner, and then you both play 5 randomly selected verses, right?
Hmm.
And then you both, for each verse, you bid how well you're going to do. Like, I mean, not bid, like, bet how well you'll do, like, if you win or not, because it basically scores you at the end of each verse, and whoever has the highest one at the end wins. So, like, you're both playing co-op, but you're actually playing against each other. And it's a super easy way to win Halos, which is, like, the currency. But it's just, it works so well. Like, it's, like, I would never have thought a multiplayer mode could work for a game like this, but it does.
I'm kind of surprised they didn't do some sort of online mode similar to God of War Ascension, in that actually had...
I haven't played the multiplayer in that.
Oh, well, basically, it was just arena battles with other players, and you could customize your character and that sort of thing. So, I'm surprised I didn't...
To kind of like a horde mode?
I think it was... Oh, it's really hard to remember because it's been a long time since I played that. But it's... I think it had like multiple objectives on maps and there would be like titans in the background and you could all... I think you could attack the titans or you could attack each other and there were capture points and that sort of thing. So I think it was fairly varied. So I'm surprised that Platinum didn't do their own take on that, but it's cool to see them do their own individual take as well, which is kind of what they're about, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think that... I don't know, like, I feel like the, I don't know, if you would did this as a PvP thing, I don't think it would work. Like, because how would you do which time, like, say, for one person... and not the other. It's just a bit confusing.
Oh, well, maybe. But then again, it could be like a power-up, and if someone else grabs the witch time, then you'll be disadvantaged in that. You'll be able to, you'll move slowly. I mean...
It's like Smash Bros.
I was right about to say that. You know, if someone else picks it up, then you're just in, you know, too bad, essentially.
Mm.
Being Platinum, I'm sure they'd find a way to work it in there, but what they've got there with Tag Climax is pretty great anyway, so... I'm not complaining.
I don't know if they'll do this because I know Platinum really don't. They try to steer away from DLC unless they're not happy with the final game, as in like Rising. But yeah, they could easily add new characters to this, new verses, because the way that Tag Climax is built, it's built to be very, you know, modular. So like they could just add more verses easy, and they could add more characters. There's a very bizarre. Like I'm surprised you can't play as Loki. Especially since you play as him in the game.
Yeah, but only for about, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But considering some of the other playable characters in that game, in that Tag Climax mode, who I won't say, because it ruins stuff, I don't know why they wouldn't have just chucked him in too. But yeah, it's a minor thing. Like, the mode is still very fun to play. There's a lot of unlockables, especially if you collect the, you buy the Platinum ticket again. Did you guys do it the last, or no? Steven wouldn't have, but did you buy the Platinum ticket in the last game, Ben?
I don't think so.
No? Like, there's a big battle, like an optional boss battle with one of the characters? No?
I don't think so. What I'm planning to do is give... Well, I liked Bayonetta on 360, but I don't think I got it as much as I got Bayonetta 2.
Yeah.
Bayonetta 2 clicked a lot more with me for whatever reason, so as a result, now I'm probably going to delve a lot more into both games, to be honest, because I'm enjoying the series more now as a result of Bayonetta 2, so...
it's good, so...
It is very good.
I'm glad that... Yeah, I am really glad that, you know, people can go back and play the first ones now, if they have just a Wii U or something, because, yeah, it's just...
I think it's the best thing they could have done.
Yeah. It's really surprising that they bothered, but, yeah, they still did, which is good. Yeah, so I think there's nothing else I can really talk about.
I'm just excited to see what Platinum Games does next because of this. If they're exclusively bringing this to Wii U.
Yeah.
That's right, Dragon Bound.
Scalebound. Yeah. So, we'll be interested to see how that turns out. I know it's not... I was going to say it's not produced by Kamiya, but neither was this. This game was made by, a new team, pretty much.
Wow.
Which is really... Yeah, it's bizarre, And, you know,
Kamiya's just too busy blocking Westerners.
What about Vanquish?
Kamiya was a supervisor. Vanquish was Mikami. He left. He did that, as a favour, with Platinum Games, but he wasn't working for them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then he moved on and did Evil Within. But, yeah, this is a completely different team. I see him on Twitter a lot. He keeps replying to people saying, don't thank me, thank, you know, these guys, because they're the ones who did it. The guy and the girl who were on the Bayonetta Direct, they're the main producers. And they've done a really good job considering, you know, how good the first one was and how... And I was kind of worried. I remember when they announced that Kamiya wasn't doing it, I was a bit worried, so I wasn't sure. But then it's kind of made me more excited for Scalebound, which isn't produced by Kamiya either. I think it's just supervised or something. But...
Well, anyway. It'd just be interesting to see because this sort of exclusivity... I haven't seen this for a while. I can't remember the last time I saw this sort of exclusivity for something that's not a Nintendo character, essentially.
Or a AAA, really big thing, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't ring any sort of memories, if you know what I mean.
One I can think of is like the Star Wars Rogue Leader games on GameCube, these things that aren't Nintendo, but they're exclusive to Nintendo for whatever reason, because Nintendo had lots of money or something.
Yeah, I mean, this is a a developer that could have gone to any platform or all platforms and been very successful, but they chose Nintendo. So it makes me really interested to see if they have anything else in the
pipeline.
Nintendo chose them.
Oh, yeah, right.
Did you know that? Yeah, like Bayonetta 2 was, they started making it. Sega were like, oh, we're really poor. And you're not the shitty Sonic game, so we're not going to make you. So
let's buy Atlas
instead.
Let's
cancel it. And then after that, Nintendo were like, hey, we want this. And then, yeah. But then that's the thing. At least Nintendo did that. Like, Microsoft and Sony didn't. I'm like, I don't want to start the war, but I'm just saying. Just saying, guys.
Sound off in the comments.
Yeah.
It'd just be nice to see this lead to even more down the track. I mean, I would definitely not say no to a Bayonetta 3. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they could top this, but then that's what I said about the first game too. So, and they managed to top it easy.
Even though there's a lot of people flying around with comments saying it's very iterative, but that's not a problem because it improves on Genius.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, exactly. Like, it was so good. Like, what's the problem? Like, yeah. I don't understand. What did they want to become a first person shooter with feet?
Like, yeah, but now you look at this and you say, Bayonetta is like the ugly child now, the ugly stepchild. So, from perspective, and that's an incredible thing to say, based purely on the fact and verbatim from you, Game of the Forever, being Bayonetta. So that's an amazing thing to turn, like, and you're a massive fan of the series, for you to turn completely on this and say Bayonetta 2 completely outstrips the original. That's an achievement.
Mm.
Yeah. So, it's a great game.
Yeah, no, it is. I need to see what they do next. I've got a feeling this might be the end of Nintendo and Platinum, but it might not be. We'll see how this sells, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, because, like, Wonderful 101 was not that good, like, in terms of sales.
I thought you meant in terms of quality, because I've been trying to play that, but I don't... it's like...
Do you know what? Okay, no, I think it's really good, but it's very obtuse. Like, it's very hard to get, like, a grip of, like, because, it's just... bizarre to control and stuff.
Yeah,
and
I like, what am it, I doing?
I definitely like Bayonetta 2 better, for sure. Well, and basically, that's just because it's more conventional.
Yeah, I mean, it's a design that speaks to me, so I ripped through it in about 5 days, which I haven't done with the game for some time. Mm. And then with Wonderful 101, I've sort of played it a few times and not really gotten the appeal. So I'll go back into it. But, you know, I mean, Bayonetta 2 just spoke to me in volumes in terms of gameplay design.
You just have to try harder, like, with Wonderful 101, which is annoying because so many people can't be bothered, and I understand why. Like, totally understand why. It is so overcomplicated for no reason. But it's still good. I enjoy it.
But then it's the more kid-friendly game, so go figure.
Is it really? Like, is it though? I don't know. Like, visually, I think it is, but I don't know about the game. But, yeah.
Mm.
Anyway, Bayonetta 2, really good. Go buy it. Trust me, you'll love it. Probably.
Good summary.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll go to a quick break and we'll return to wrap up the episode. And we're back. So on the site itself, if you were interested in the new 3DS, Vuk has a full review up of the, I think it's the tiny one, the small one.
Yeah, yeah. The regular new 3DS.
Yeah, so if you're interested in that, check it out. There's a lot of photos. If you want to see a photo of something, I don't know, like a comparison shot, maybe ask him. I'm sure he'll be happy to oblige. Because no one else is doing coverage of this thing, apparently.
No, he's got, photos, videos, written review. He's done a lot on this thing.
Pro tip is not sleeping.
Yeah, I don't think he sleeps at all.
Speaking of which, there's lots of reviews on the site too. Oh my god, I wrote a lot in the last few weeks. Fantasy Life for 3DS, the review is now up. That's very late, but we received the copy very late, so I wasn't going to be... Yeah, I didn't actually think I was going to write up about it at all. But yeah, it's up. I didn't like it. I did, but not that much. Bayonetta, the original version, like the first game, the review of that is up. Gaia Breaker on Wii U eShop, apparently it's terrible. Bayonetta 2 review is also up. Toy Stunt Bike, also terrible. Disney Magical World, which is basically Disney Animal Crossing minus the soul and the content, that's also up.
So is this just a gold statue of Bayonetta surrounded by piles of turd?
No. Someone draw that.
Yeah, someone draw that and we'll make you, I don't know.
Look at it this way. It could have been worse.
Yeah. But then the next two games are good. Lone Survivor on Wii U and Still Thinker 2 on Wii U. Both eShop titles. Both I gave 4 out of 5. I mean, I don't want to compare them to Bayonetta because they're completely different games, but they're not as good as Bayonetta, but they're still pretty good. Like, Lone Survivor is really, really well done. Like, really good survival horror game that I really recommend. Still Thinker 2, same thing. I think it might be... It kind of taps into that kind of portal kind of design.
It scratches like, that itch, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a stealth game, but it also has, you know, these test chambers. So, like, I really recommend that to people who like, say, the kind of repetition and perfecting of games like, say, Super Meat Boy and Portal and, you know, like, yeah. It's just really good. Really good game. But yeah, so that's what, freaking 8-9 reviews up in the last month, which is crazy. So much stuff. Next episode is on Wednesday the 16th of November. It will be, unless something really, really big happens as per usual, it will be a Vox Critical review tape, so VCR tape. It's a game that I will put up a post on the Facebook later on in the week, but as we'll give you a clue now, this year the game turns 15 years old, so if you can do the math, it's probably going to be a Nintendo 64 game. Yep. So yeah. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. If you want, you can leave us a review on iTunes. As we said,
that'd be nice.
Yeah, it'd be really nice. I like, even if it's bad, we don't care. Just tell us why, so we can get better. Like, I just want reviews. I want feedback. So yeah, that's all for this episode. Thanks for joining us, Stephen and Ben.
No problem.
You're so welcome.
And yeah, we'll see you in another fortnight's time.
Goodbye, all my friends.
Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.
Ciao, ciao.